Welcome to another edition of the Business and Life Channel by Peter Daniels. Here, every week, we explore business and life through interviews, stories, and shared information. You'll meet some amazing people and gain valuable understanding of not only what people have achieved in business and life, but their thinking behind their achievements, their motivations, their struggles, and victories. You'll pick up on the lessons they've learned, the things they did on their business and life journey that worked, why they did it, and maybe even some things they wouldn't do again. So let's join Peter for this week's episode. We trust that you enjoy it.
Well, today I've got Angela Lovett on the line, and Angela owns a counselling business, but she's also developed a program for support workers called Support Excellence. And I'd like to welcome you to the Business and Life Channel. Angela, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Pete. It's good to be here.
It is good to have you on this program. Now, let's just have a bit of a chat about your background. Were you born in Adelaide or born in the country? Where were you born?
I was born in Berry in the Riverland. Yep. And moved to Adelaide when I was four.
Okay, so Riverland girl, but you don't remember a whole lot about the Riverland, but I dare say you've been back from time to time.
Yes, we certainly do get back there quite often.
Yeah, good on you. Now, all of us have a first job that we get involved in. What was your first job, Angela?
Oh, I had two of them at the same time. I had I did night fill at Drake's, and I worked in a deli nearby to my home as well.
Okay, so learning a bit about interacting with clients, customer service, that sort of thing?
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah. Okay, and then a little bit later on, you sort of gravitated towards support roles with aged care and other environments. What were some of those roles that you were involved in?
Yeah, definitely. Aged care worker, disability support worker. I worked for an agency, so you got to see a lot of settings. Mm-hmm. Disability employment, I worked as a counsellor, back into disability as accommodation services, my aged care assessor, back into disability again, managing teams and staff. Then I got a role that allowed me to be part of the workshops and development for aged care workers and disability support staff, and finally into my own businesses.
Okay. And at the moment you've got a counselling business, but you've sort of developed this passion that you haven't been able to toss around helping support workers do better in their role, haven't you? So
absolutely.
Yeah, yep. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But over that time, and I'm not being rude here, Angela, but I'm presuming it might be 15 years or so, you would have seen a lot of change in support work and how that's changed since you've been involved.
Yes, and you're being very kind. It's been about 23 years.
Oh, really?
And there has been a lot of changes. I think, you know, things used to be run on a more institutionalized basis or group homes, which is still around, of course, but a lot of the time it was working with other people. So you had senior support workers to sort of direct you and guide you and help with developing the skills you learn in your studies. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of that has changed. A lot has moved to community-based care, where you work predominantly on your own, depending on your client needs, of course. Mm-hmm. And the stress has changed quite significantly. There's a lot more stress these days from, you know, what's reported with the people that I work with.
Mm. And I think, too, just the ageing population, NDIS as a community, as a country, trying to support those with disability better, all of that's played into things, hasn't it?
It most certainly has, yeah.
Yeah. And then I think there's also legislation that's changed too. So, and that probably is a really good intro into support excellence. I think all of us know someone who's had a family member or a friend who's been supported in either aged care or disability or through the NDIS. And I know we're appreciative of the people who look after our loved ones, but I think we've all seen some of the tangled web of care yeah, around different things and how that seems to stifle what can be done and what rules have to be followed. It must affect quality of care, and I think this is one of the aspects you cover in your support excellence programs. Can we talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you're talking about in particular, like I think it all plays into it, Pete, but in particular the confusion around duty of care, dignity of risk and choice and control.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the terms are, I think individually we generally understand the terms,
yes,
but when we're trying to practice on the ground working with people, they can become a little bit mismatched or confusing. So we do, we touch on them during the program and we look at duty of care being, you know, the legal obligation that we have to not allow, you know, ourselves or others to come to harm. Mm-hmm. We have dignity of risk.
Yep.
So allowing people to make their choice with an informed choice.
Yes.
And where we mitigate the risk as much as possible.
Uh-huh.
And we have choice and control. Mm. And I think that's the one that really gets a bit tricky sometimes.
Yes.
It often comes back to actually people having correct information to be able to make an informed choice and have control over the way that they want their services to look.
Mm-hmm.
And also knowing that we can't be everything for everyone.
No.
So being really transparent about how and what we can offer.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't quite meet the needs of our client, how do we facilitate then being in touch with the people that might be able to help in that aspect?
Mm. Yeah, that's really good. And you've got many modules in that particular learning situation. What are some of the other modules that you go through in the Support Excellence Program?
Yeah, so we have a look at a whole lot. So it really is broken down into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
We have a look at the rules for things like the NDIS Code of Conduct. We look at our quality indicators and outcomes versus output.
Mm-hmm.
We also look at the client, like obviously there's a lot more in there than that, but looking at the client as an individual and seeing how the influence of our experiences can come into how we view or how we treat a client, good intentions versus good outcomes. They can really look quite different.
Mm-hmm.
Deficit model, limiting beliefs, social valued roles. So, you know, there's a lot of aspects that come into it, even understanding how sympathy versus empathy and the differences that produces within the support we provide.
Mm.
We also unpack the actual support worker role and the impact that we have in that role. So exploring with respect and really seeing the client and how that influences what we can come up with goals, making sure that goals are not only identified appropriately, but then we're enacting our support in a way that allows people to achieve those goals. Looking at a strength-based approach, professionalism and professional boundaries, and the right fit as well.
Mm.
I think, you know, Pete, there's a lot of training out there that focuses on the what.
Yes.
A lot of resources that we have that tell us what to do or what not to do.
Yeah, right.
These workshops really focus on the why.
Yeah, right.
Because if the support worker in the organisation better understands all the aspects of what they can do and what they can't do, or specifically how it can be done best, it frees them up to be in a safe working environment and to provide the absolute best outcomes they can for the people they support.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? And if it happens to be one of our loved ones, we really want that, don't we? We want them to be looked after and respected and given options and to be able to enjoy what they're doing and clarify goals and move towards them.
Absolutely.
And you know with me, that's a big thing too, is goals. So that's terrific. So if people are working in an environment where they don't have this sort of knowledge, I would imagine that would be very restrictive and that sort of be limited by, you know, the rules and what they're supposed to do and maybe even two or three aspects that they're comfortable with rather than exploring the freedoms within which they can work.
Absolutely. I do find that a lot of the people that I work with tell me about difficulties in navigating if we put it together in term as the rules or different aspects of what we work under, feeling pressure to perform but not knowing exactly those boundaries, confusion around the words we use and implementing them into everyday aspects of the role, a lot of burnout. And, you know, that can become very demotivating in our role.
Well, you haven't got anything to give if you're burned out. And I must say I've met some people who've worked in either aged care or disability and they seem to be continually asked to do more with less, and that's a bit of a prescription for a disaster. And we're not putting anyone down here, but we're trying to equip these people so that the passions that they had when they joined this industry are still there and they're able to do something with the degree of excellence. And I suppose that's how you came up with that name.
Yes, it most certainly is.
Okay, cool. So I would imagine that it would cost a lot of money to have a support person in aged care or NDIS disability. There'd be a lot of money in just caring for these people, wouldn't there?
Huge amounts of money.
Yep.
I would have to say, billion-dollar industry, especially if you put together the aged care and the disability care.
The ones who are the closest to those we're trying to love, support and look after are these support workers, aren't they?
Absolutely. And in some cases, the support workers are the only real connections that some of these people have in their life.
Yeah, and I suppose they also not only connecting personally, but they have to connect backwards to the goals of the organisation that they are representing, the values that they espouse, the way that they want things done, and that can be a very confusing space to live in, I would imagine.
Oh, it most certainly can be. Professional boundaries is something that I think that's sort of what you're talking about there as well, Pete. It's something that we really unpack and go through and sink our teeth into to really understand what are those boundaries, what do they look like, and the importance of maintaining them, because I've worked with a lot of support workers and team leaders and coordinators who don't necessarily maintain the boundaries. Their intentions are fabulous. These are really good-hearted people who are intending to do an amazing job, but we need to bring it back to what is the true impact on the client when we do breach our professional boundaries or not maintain them in the way they should be. So the workshops really do focus on basic what are the boundaries, because most people know them, but really why is it so important that we do maintain them at all times?
Yeah. And I think probably too, in an environment where there's a lot of pressure and we've been doing things the way we have for a long time, it sort of reminds me of this story. It's an old one, but it's a good one, of why Grandma had cut the end off the piece of meat before she put it into the oven. I don't know whether you've heard that one, Angela, have you?
I haven't.
No, let me give it to you because I think it probably explains something here. It was coming up to Christmas time and Grandma was in the house and she got this big glorious piece of meat and cut the end off it and threw it away and put the rest in the oven and away she went. And someone looked at her and said, Grandma, why did you throw that away? And she said, well, that's what you're supposed to do. Then they said, but why? Well, I don't know. My mother taught me. Well, great-grandmother was in the other room. And so they went over to see great-grandmother and said, great-grandmother, why do you do that? She said, well, have you been doing that? And she said, yeah, well, I've been doing it, and I've taught my daughter and my granddaughter to do the same. And she said, oh, no. She said, I always cut the end off because I had a very small oven. And I think some people cut the end off things because that's the way they've always been doing it, or they've seen someone else do something like that and they've gone, that's the norm. And this situation that you've created, this course, helps people recalibrate on what it should look like so that we can get some excellence happening. So I've got a couple of questions around it. How much does your course cost for a person to be involved?
So it's normally $295, but there's actually a special at the moment that I'll tell you about a little bit later.
Oh, okay. That sounds good. Well, quite frankly, $295 per person is pretty good anyhow, considering the amount of money that's spent on bringing legislation and care to these people. So what will it do for a support worker if they participate in this particular program?
Yeah, sure. It from the feedback I've had from support workers, they've let me know that it helps to reignite the passion that they have for the work that they do, reducing stress, increasing motivation, increasing job satisfaction, bringing back all of those positive feelings, emotions and workings that they can bring to the table when they're at work.
What will it do for those who are being supported if the support worker recalibrates, gets their passion back, is excited about serving and supporting?
It absolutely transforms the support that they receive to levels that benefit every aspect of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to achieve goals and independence. It revolutionises the outcomes that become available to them because of the changes that their support workers experience in the way that they conduct themselves in the role. Mm-hmm. So it opens up so many opportunities, and the level of support that they receive is absolutely life-changing.
Well, it's that excellence that you're talking about, and I would imagine it's a shot in the arm for those who are being supported, because all of a sudden they realise there are more options rather than just sitting here and looking out the window. And I suppose the organisations get a big tick too, because if the support workers are doing a really great job and those who are being supported are engaging with the benefits of what the support worker learns, then they're happy Vegemites as well. And the organisation looks really good, doesn't it?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, when I've spoken to some of the organisations post the workshops, some of the feedback that they've given as well is that it's helped to reduce burnout for their support workers. Work cover and employment costs can change because rather than having people who are burnt out, not quite sure, sometimes cutting the end off the meat, their support workers are, you know, able to take on a new lease in their role and find joy and passion in what they're doing.
That's good, isn't it?
It is good. And for an organisation to have staff that are motivated and passionate about their work again, it helps to maintain employment levels, which is a really serious issue for the industry because it's chronically understaffed and over the next 10 years or so will become progressively worse.
Yes.
With the number of people requiring support as well as the reduced number of people who are available working in the industry. So we do want to take care of those people who are on the ground and really bringing this all together.
Well, if the organisations don't have the support workers, they don't have an organisation.
Absolutely.
And I think some people and some organisations are starting to wake up to this, that those they've thrown in the middle to do the work are really fundamental to the quality of work, and you need to look after them. So a little while ago, we talked about a couple of things, but this course actually sounds like it's something that people should be getting educated in, and you alluded to the fact that there might be a benefit, a special of some sort. Tell us about that. What's the dollars that's needed for them to enroll? What's this special all about?
Yeah, sure. So currently, I'm offering it at $165 for people who are enrolled before the end of January, ready for the positions in the workshop that will be upcoming in February.
Okay, and you've got plenty of room in that for people, have you?
Currently, yes.
You're good. Well, I think and I hope a whole lot of people listening to this are going to go, wow, that's a really good deal, and I think it's a really good deal. So take advantage of that. And how do they actually connect with you so that they can enrol?
Our best way to connect is just to send me an email and I will be able to send them course information and payment details from there.
And we'll have that on the bottom of this podcast so that everybody's got those contact details. That's terrific. Well done, Angela. And you've been a client of mine now for, feels like we've got to know each other really well, but it's less than 12 months. What's been the benefit of the Leaders State Australia process for you, and how's it helped you in grabbing this idea you've got, turning it into a product and getting it happening? What's been the benefit for you?
That is exactly it, Peter. Oh, really? I have had this swimming around for so long now, and wanting to bring it to fruition on the larger scale, and just being able to do that, to have the knowledge and guidance that you have being shared with me. It's also helped with my motivation. It's something that I've worked at for a little bit on a small scale. Well, I've worked at for quite a while on a small scale.
Yes.
But the dream of bringing it onto a larger scale, I've sort of toyed with that idea for a little bit, and it's gone around and around. And it's working with you in this process has just brought everything into the open, but in a manageable way for me. It's not something I feel I could work through independently and get the same results.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed working with you on this, because I've seen your passion, and you and I have had some really good discussions around what the issues are in support workers, and I'm just really hopeful that people can see the huge benefits that are able to be gained for a small amount of investment to help support workers, the organisations, and the people that they're supporting. And anything I can do to help is available, because I just believe in it as much as you do, Angela. So it's been
wonderful. Thank you so much, Peter.
It's been a wonderful experience that we've had together professionally, and I think it'll go on and on. And there's probably two or three more ideas in that head of yours, Angela. And I think once we get this one sorted, they'll come out and they'll come to fruition as well. But thank you for being on the Business and Life channel, and we will make available all the details at the bottom of this podcast so that those who may be interested in signing up and taking advantage of that offer can get that happening really quickly. So thank you for being on today, Angela.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
No, really appreciate it. Catch you later on.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Business and Life channel. For further information, extra learning, and assistance with your business or life's journey and aspirations, Peter can be contacted at leadaustralia.com.au. That's LEAD Australia, one word, .com.au. He'd be very happy to help. The information in this podcast can be downloaded for your personal use, but it cannot be reproduced in any form without the written consent of Lead Australia.